Today on Movie Wallahs, we discuss Unbroken and American Sniper. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hi.
Hello.
I am eyeing the biscotti on the table and thinking you should have another piece.
They are good.
They're very good. They're called Hazelnut Zebra.
These are actually available in the US because
Bebop biscottis.
They were part of a Christmas basket that I received from a co-worker. And yeah, they're really tasty.
They're just very loud.
Make sure to thank her tomorrow. Thank you, Teresa.
You should.
They're delicious. Huge.
They are. But I could
and
eat
crunchy.
One.
Crunchy. Yes. I mean, they are. They're not radio friendly.
No.
They're not.
No, they're not podcast friendly. And you'd have to kind of either suck on it or have more dipping.
Yes, and you need to have good oral health.
Oh,
you need strong.
Yes.
You need to have strong teeth.
I was like, what?
Like, okay.
Yeah.
You need strong teeth. You have to use your molars.
That's right. You do.
You do. Yeah. You're not going to get through these.
Or suck them a lot.
Or dip them.
Dip them, which is what I did. Dipped in tea, actually, is really nice. They take the sweet edge off them. My recommendation.
Okay.
So, one thing we haven't spoken about on the podcast that I thought might be worth talking about is the whole fiasco in December about the interview.
Yes.
Yes.
Because it was amazing to me that a movie that... I have any of us seen it yet? Because I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it.
We couldn't.
And I don't know if I'd admit if I had seen it.
Well, I actually want to see it, but
yeah,
I know,
like to
I know
it.
It's going to be terrible, so I almost can't be bothered to pay the $5 or whatever it is to rent it at home. I'm going to probably just wait till it's out on Netflix.
In my defense, I mean, I absolutely 100% wanted to see it just to stand up to, you know, just to make a political
right.
statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just amazing that something as little as that can kind of bring down the whole studio system. And, you know, they kind of just completely caved in to the demands. And then it was weird because then it kind of had this trickle, you know, mousey kind of release, you know, where it was showing a little bit here and there.
Yeah, it was interesting how Sony then decided to release it, but the studio, right. the movie theaters didn't want to take the chance, right?
Correct.
Is that what went
yeah,
down?
Yeah, that's what went down.
Yeah, and you can't blame them, you know. I mean, if someone threatens,
right,
you know, taking people's lives as a result of a movie being shown at your theater, I guess no one wants to take that responsibility. So I understand why they didn't, but I wish it had been for a better movie, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't really say that fairly because we haven't seen the movie, yeah, but
and the
by
screening
all
was
accounts,
cancelled, right? I mean,
yes.
we were due to see
the screening was cancelled.
An advance preview of the movie, and the screening got cancelled, which...
Well, once Sony knew that they were not going to distribute it on Christmas Day, as they'd originally thought, yeah, they pulled the screenings
the
as well,
screenings.
The advanced press screenings as well. I think in San Diego, though, the one good thing which came out of it was that a lot of people who had no idea what the Digital Gym is, you know, they were exposed to it. So the Digital Gym was the only
theater
on El Cajon Boulevard.
Yeah.
It's the only theater in San Diego which actually showed the movie. They screened
I didn't know
the movie.
That. That's terrific.
And so a lot of people who wanted to make, you know, make the stand, go show support for, you know, not cowing down to pressures from outside, they made that trip to the Digital Gym. So I think it got a lot of very good publicity, and good for them because they were the only ones with the balls to take the risk.
And I feel like the Digital Gym should be called the digital gem because it does show some cute little interesting movies that no one else will ever show.
Absolutely.
Really obscure, interesting material.
Yeah. And not obscure for the sake of being obscure, but good cinema.
Just stuff that doesn't get distribution, is
correct.
It? Or?
Things which are really on, you know, on the fringe.
Some interesting foreign movies that no one's ever going to get to see, basically.
Terrific. Is it a chain or is it just a one?
No,
one
it's one off. It's associated with the San Diego Film Society, with the San Diego Latino Film Society. It's a really nice outlet, because there's a small screening room. It maybe seats less than 100 people. That's where they show the movie. And then upstairs is a place where they have classrooms where they show, teach film to kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place where, you know,
the
film festival can organize. The San Diego Latino Film Festival used to be organized out of those premises. So it's a great place which fosters local film within San Diego.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you are in town, yeah, definitely look that place up. I think we should go there.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess the interview came and went, and it was, I just looked on Rotten Tomatoes, 52%.
I mean, everyone I know who has seen the movie has told me what a goofball movie it is. And, the general consensus has been that it's not all that funny. It has a few high points, but really it is, you know, just a Franco Rogan stoner movie wrapped up in something, a little controversial in terms of topic. But, by all accounts, it's not that good. But I don't know, when I see it, I'll maybe talk about it on the podcast. I do want to see it.
Yeah, the unfortunate downside of this whole thing is based on what the events, the way they unfolded. I think now big studios are going to be very careful about taking on any kind of material which might remotely get them into trouble. So it's going to unfortunately steer people to the straight and narrow.
In other words, censorship in some way. Self-censorship.
Yeah. At least for studio films.
Yeah, either that or they hire a new head of IT security, because that's a shame.
Right.
All right, well, let's move on to our reviews of the week. We have American Sniper and we have Unbroken.
Two war movies,
yes, mm-hmm. That's right. Very different eras.
Yes.
And both based on real men.
Yes.
Real heroes, yeah.
So Unbroken is based on Laura Hillenbrand's book. She famously wrote the movie the book Seabiscuit, but she also did this book published a couple of years ago, I believe, with to much critical acclaim. It's a very loved book. It's something I worked through prior to seeing the movie. And when I say work through, it's a very long book. It's a biography of Louis Zamperini. He was famously... Well, he ran in the Olympics in, I think, 1938, received, was even acknowledged and met Hitler, and then went on to serve his country in World War II in the Pacific, and was taken as POW by the Japanese. The book is an exploration of his life, really. It's a full-on biography from birth up until he hadn't died at the time that the book was released, but he has died since. And Angelina Jolie took on the project and has created this film, Unbroken, by the same name. The movie stars Jack O'Connell as Lou Zamperini. I think he's a relative newcomer. Domhnall Gleeson and a Japanese actor by the name of Miyavi, who plays... He's a pop star. Okay, interesting. Yeah, who plays Ken Watanabe, also known as The Bird, the infamous prison guard that was really a source of much torment for Louis Zamperini. So, guys, what did you think? Oh, and I should add that the screenplay was written by Laura Hillenbrand. She had input, obviously, based on her book, but was co-written by Joel and Ethan Coen. The Coen brothers, and also Richard Lagravanes. So, guys, what did you think of Unbroken?
Okay, so I was really looking forward to the movie because, Joe, like you said, you ripped through the book. Considering it was a really, really long book, I mean, you literally ripped through it in a matter of weeks. So I was thinking, gosh, this is going to be really exciting. And I was excited to see what Angelina Jolie would do with a Coen brothers script. I know it's not entirely a Coen brothers script, but with a Coen brothers script nonetheless. And I have to say, I was really, really disappointed. I think this film was competently made, but what should have devastated me literally bored me to tears, and I couldn't wait for this to be over.
I think this is an amazing story. I haven't read the book, but I think it's an absolutely incredible story. It almost, were it not true, it almost defies expectations that somebody could have actually lived through it at every level. You know, right from his childhood was very interesting, and then he certainly was, you know, one of the fastest men to run. But then once he enlisted in the war, everything that happened is so so remarkable and hard to believe that when you have a story like that, it's almost good to, you know, just get out of the way of the story. And I think that's what Angelina Jolie did. That's what Joel and Ethan Coen did, is that they follow a very, very straight and narrow mainstream telling of this particular story, which in itself is not bad. It still makes for a very fascinating story, but it does come across as a little bit of a lost opportunity because, like you said, Rashmi, what should have at the end of the day been, you know, just an emotionally exhausting experience, instead the only thing the movie leaves you with is a lot of respect for this man. And I was hoping that I would have this journey with this person, whereas I was a little bit at a distance. And I don't know if that's in the direction or the way the story is handled. I would still recommend this movie to everyone. I think there's something very old-fashioned and very classic and very mainstream about it. It's a great war story, but I expect it to be more emotionally balanced. Yeah.
Joe. Sure.
Is the word reverential or deferential?
Depends what you're saying.
Yeah, depends.
Okay, because
I think you mean reverential.
I wrote reverential, and I'm like, did I mean deferential? Anyway, so yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest problem with the way that this movie was portrayed, I felt it was very reverential, and mm-hmm. I think they focused on showing the greatness of the man. They wanted him to be, you know, the hero that he was, and I don't want to detract from that, but I think there are so many elements to this story and this journey that, as a result of, I think, holding him in such high esteem, they weren't able to deliver. The book itself, Rashmi, I mean, when you say I tore through it in a matter of weeks, actually the first third of the book I found to be something of a chore. It's a very dense source material. Really focused heavily on who the man was, and at the time of reading it I was like, I don't need all this background, but I think the background then led me into why he reacted and behaved the way that he did under these very difficult circumstances, because he did act with enormous self-esteem and pride and you know, under horrible circumstances, this guy kind of held his head high and never really lost his core values. I think the movie took on too much. I think it's almost too much to put in a movie. This should, as we said, I think, of the movie Mandela, have been kind of a mini series. There's so many elements to this story about who this man is and what he did and what he endured, that I think, you know, the movie was just, it was too lightweight in areas that it should have gone into deep detail, and then too heavy in some areas where it could have glossed over. So for me, it had the balance wrong of the storytelling. But I never felt like we got to know the man in the movie in the way that I got to know him in the book. And, you know, fair criticism, a book is not a movie, and a movie is not a book. But the biggest single point of disappointment for me overall is the role of Miyavi and the bird.
Yeah.
Because the ferocity and the cruelty that man bestowed upon Lou Zamperini in real life and in the book and in the story was just handled horribly. I didn't sense the evil of him. I thought it was just such a misstep in telling that story, because it was such a critical aspect of the prison life. And so, you know, for me, that was the movie's major failing, and I can't forgive it for that, because it's forgetting a central aspect of the story.
Yeah, I think for me, I just didn't feel any connection with any of the characters that were shown, and the story was, yes, you said it. You said it was a linear story. For me, it was linear and dull. I mean, this is a really interesting story, like you said, Joe, about an incredible experience, both in the first half of his life when he was an Olympian, and then in the second part of his life when he's a prisoner of war. But I never felt like the main protagonist's life was really in any danger. I didn't really get that sense. And there was never tension. And then as a whole movie, it didn't feel like there was anything new that it offered us. I remember growing up in the 80s, there was a brilliant prisoner of war series that used to come on TV called Tenko, which was about a women's prison in Japan. And it was superb. This didn't even come a hair close to that.
I had exactly the opposite feeling about the bird character.
Interesting.
Because I haven't read the book, but to me, the way it was portrayed in the movie, this person seemed so irrationally evil that it almost, it felt unrealistic. It felt like nobody in real life would go out of their way to make somebody else's life that miserable. You know, just specifically him. And I realized it was a battle of wills between the two of them a little bit, but that part almost betrayed to me, you know, this shred of reality or authenticity that the movie had carried up until that point. And then that character seemed almost like a fake Hollywood villain to me. Somebody who is so, you know, off the charts evil and just resolutely looking to make his life terrible, that it almost
didn't feel like a plot device.
Like a plot device. Yeah.
It's interesting you should say that, because in the book, this person is absolutely irrationally evil, but it goes deeper than that. And I think that's where the movie maybe failed to exploit the depths of it, because, you know, this is a person who should have been an officer, who was never made an officer. And as a consequence, he felt real resentment to anyone who, especially an officer. Louis was an officer. Louis was also considered to be an Olympic champion. And this is somebody. Well, I won't go too much into telling the book story, but it's interesting you say that came across in terms of his evil, because, you know, the kind of things that he does to Louis in the book are really glossed over here. I mean, the book is actually a very difficult read for much of the prison section in Japan. I mean, literally at times I had to stop reading to just recover from, you know, the few paragraphs that I'd read before. So anyhow, interesting that you say that. What about Jolie's direction here? I mean, I think it was going for the big Hollywood feel. I think it was a little not of its time. I mean, this is the kind of movie that maybe, you know, we might have seen in the 50s or 60s.
Yeah. So it's definitely going for that old-fashioned.
I like the epic. There's a great battle scene at the beginning. Where the planes are going down. I think it was competently directed for the most part. It was all very clinical and by the book. I didn't see anything new. I didn't see anything that wowed me.
And so much has been made of Jack O'Connell, you know, who plays the lead character. And it's certainly a very plum role, but I don't know. I mean, there's another movie he's in, which came out this year, called Startup, which everybody's swearing by and I'm trying to get my hands on. But I don't see what the big deal was about him, at least based on this movie.
Yeah, I hate criticizing anyone's acting, but I mean, he really didn't do it for me here.
Again, I didn't like him very much.
I feel like maybe the missteps were in how he was written and how he was directed. I think he didn't. The material didn't seem to delve into some of the depths and the problems that really existed in real life. Like, you know, the plane crash and the survival on the boat. You know, there are a couple of interesting facts about that plane crash in terms of how the plane and the whole, what the death rates were in World War II of airmen in planes that were not shot down. It's phenomenal. I mean, these things were death traps, and it took several years into the war before these things became actually safe enough that we weren't losing more from crashes than we were through being shot down. The boat, they were on a boat at that point longer in time than anyone else had ever been set adrift. You know, again, not touched upon in the movie.
Yeah, and she said a lot about her process for auditioning and how they had put them in a confined space, you know, the potential actors, she'd put them in confined spaces for a long amount of time. And apparently people were screaming to be let out, but this guy was very quiet and thoughtful and introverted. Well, that's, I think, how the movie came across, but it wasn't what the movie was going for.
Yeah, I think you might have nailed it, Joe, is that, you know, Zamperini was alive through much of the filming of the movie and he was used as a consultant. And I know Jolie got to be very good friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is one of her great regrets that he actually died in July, like 6 months before the movie could be released. But I think it's because of, you know, trying to make a movie in the shadows of that person being alive and present, you cannot help but be very reverential to that particular material.
Yeah.
So I think it's just one of those things, you know, due to circumstance, maybe.
Yeah.
She was driven that way. Anyway.
Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
You know, overall, this movie was a big disappointment to me. I think the opportunity for this, you know, this story to be told in a way that had more weight, more gravity, that, you know, that you just feel like they've blown it here, and that's really sad when you understand what he went through. In part, they bit off more than they could chew. I think to try and tell this story in 2 hours was just not going to happen. There were too many things in here that could take, you know, a whole mini series within themselves to explore. I mean, you could get 3 seasons of a show from this story from start to finish. So, you know, I think it was overly ambitious, and you know, in terms of how well it was executed, it just wasn't executed well enough. I like you guys, I wanted to come out with tears streaming down my face, with you know, having, you know, been through some of the understood what this man had been through, and I didn't get any of that. So, oh dear, you're gonna have to give it a 6 out of 10, which Rashmi is aghast by. Why are you?
It's such a high score.
Really?
I think a 6 is something to aspire above, okay. As far as the rating goes.
Yeah, I would give it a 6 out of 10 as well. Like I said, for somebody who doesn't know anything about Zamperini, it's a very good introduction to his life. I agree with everything Joe said. It's probably too you know, there's too much cramped within the 2 hours of the running time of the movie. And in general, we've spoken about this. Most movies that we see would do well to be converted into miniseries instead. I do give this movie some credit for sincerity, for you know, it's kind of, they had a good heart, I think, but the movie was not as devastating as it should have been. And it kind of explains, you know, when the studios had watched the movie, I think the movie was filmed and ready by summer last year, but they were deliberately releasing it at the end of Christmas because they realized it would be a big Oscar kind of movie. And everybody, sight unseen, had decided that this was the movie which was going to win Best Picture this year. And you can see it's not even in the conversation anymore with the award circuit and the award circuit. And that kind of reflects most people's feelings about the movie. It's still a worthy effort, 6 out of 10.
Overall, I feel like my spirit broke having to sit there and watch this for over 2 hours. 4 out of 10.
Ouch. It's a very well-made film. I mean, yeah, to its credit, you know, Roger Deakin was the cinematographer, and, you know, the film is very good to look at, although not remarkably good to look at in the way that Deakin's other work seems to be.
You know, not when we've seen amazing cinematography like The Theory of Everything and sure, Selma. No,
but it's a competently made film.
Of course, I mean, it is. It's very competently made.
In terms of its mechanics and, you know, it's not a bore. I think 4 is really tough.
Okay.
All right, moving on. American Sniper.
Okay, so Clint Eastwood brings us American Sniper, and this stars Bradley Cooper as Chris Kyle, who was apparently the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history. And he was a U.S. Navy SEAL, and he was actually sent to Iraq with only one mission, to protect his brothers in arms. But his pinpoint accuracy was so good that he kept going back on more of those tours, and apparently he had the nickname Legend. So this basically stars, like I said, Bradley Cooper, Luke Grimes, Sienna Miller, Carl Gallner, Ben Reed, Elise Robertson, as amongst others. And it's directed by Clint Eastwood, and it's written by Jason Hall. And we got to see this, I think, just before Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you and I, Rashmi, again, we saw a studio-sanctioned screener that was sent to us. So we watched it at home. We didn't get a chance to see it on a big screen. Yazdi, did you see it?
I
saw through the screener as well.
Through the screener as well,
because
yeah.
The movie only opened yesterday.
Correct.
That's right. So there were no press screenings.
Okay, and Bradley Cooper has been given a nod for Best Actor. And American Sniper is picked as one of the best movies this year, amongst some other technical awards as well. So
did Clint Eastwood get a director nod?
No.
Okay.
So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So you guys know that I'm a steadfast fan of Clint Eastwood, the director, even through his Jersey Boys days. And I like his films that others do not. And remember Year After? I think I was the only person to have that movie on my year-end top 10 list.
Right.
In the world, perhaps.
Yeah. So I there's something about Clint Eastwood. I may not agree with him politically at all, but there's something about him that kind of resonates with me. I think with this particular story, the degree of difficulty is high. Mostly because it comes under the shadows of the Hurt Locker, and it's based on a living character, the deadliest sniper in American history, as you mentioned in your introduction. And, Eastwood is known for his no fuss, come prepared, get in and out, finish shooting ahead of schedule kind of work ethic. But even with that, I think this must have been a difficult shoot. So considering all of those things and the high expectations, I think the movie gets the job done.
So you liked it?
I liked it, yes.
Joe.
I didn't love it. I'm not in love with it, but I liked it. We can talk more.
Yeah, I'm not a diehard Clint Eastwood as a director fan. I think he has hits and misses, and as of late he has not been working for me, but I'm happy to say that this movie did. I think this is among his better films, and it still has that very to me somewhat contrived mechanical. It doesn't feel like any of the scenes were particularly labored over. That may be a completely unfair perception, knowing what we know about Clint Eastwood's direction. But I think the movie was probably not quite as polished as it could have been. But that said, my only real problem with this movie is that the Hurt Locker exists. And many of the same themes within the Hurt Locker are present here. And frankly, then they're not handled with the depth and subtlety that we got in the Hurt Locker. So, you know, overall a very competent Iraq veteran story, but not one that really has stayed with me in the way that Hurt Locker did.
I agree with everything you said, Joe. I mean, no doubt Bradley Cooper is amazing in this movie as Chris Kyle. But I think more than the acting, this is an engaging war movie that I actually liked, that did things a little bit differently. And actually a Clint Eastwood movie that I like, because I don't particularly like him and I hated Jersey Boys. So I like this one more than his other movies. But I think a couple of really standout things in my mind that I think Clint Eastwood did really well. I think I noticed great editing and the use of story and news that we haven't seen used before, such as bombings in East Africa versus the usual 9/11 footage that we see that, you know, is the call to war to Afghanistan. But the Hurt Locker kept coming up for me as well, Joe. I think I always compare these movies to Hurt Locker because that's my golden standard, I think, because it was such a good movie. I think this one portrays the human experience a little bit more than Hurt Locker did. And I think it certainly takes that PTSD and the trouble that soldiers have returning to normal life a little bit more. And I think it did a good job of showing that disconnect of when someone has a mission, they have a purpose and a mission, and no one else gets it. So go on, Joe. You're
shaking my head violently with disagreement around the Hurt Locker human elements, because that's what the Hurt Locker did for me that no other war movie had done as effectively up until that time, which is what happens when you come back, you know?
Right, but in Hurt Locker, it's two scenes. Here, it's like the narrative throughout the movie with his relationship with his wife and family.
But that's what I'm getting at. Meaningful and resonant scenes they were, but nonetheless.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. I think this movie's great misfortune is that it comes on the heels of the Hurt Locker. But I think it gets a lot of those things done that Hurt Locker did. And I think one of them is it gives you a sense for, you know, what it is like for the on-the-ground combats of American soldiers, in this case, a sniper. And I think it hits all the right notes. And in that mode, making the case, you know, for war being hell, you know, at every level, you know, physically, mentally, psychically, emotionally, spiritually. You know, and I think, you know, it makes very good observations about the necessary brotherhood of soldiers. You know, when you're in a life and death situation, you really have to rely on people next to you to save your lives. And it kind of builds the kind of bond that few other situations can. This live and die by the minute, harrowing lives, you know, where people see things that no human should have to see. So I think it kind of hits those notes pretty efficiently.
Yeah.
And I think, like you already said, it also hits the notes about what happens when somebody comes back from war. And I agree. I'm with you, Joe, that I think actually Hurt Locker was far superior at doing that, maybe with fewer scenes.
Yeah.
If you ask me, actually, the movie to watch in this regard is, you know, a great movie which played at film festivals this year and never got a theatrical release, but now is on Netflix. It's called Fort Bliss.
Yes.
And it has Michelle Monaghan in it.
Watching, yes.
And I think that movie really hits on, you know, the emotional impact and what a soldier deals with once, you know, when they're between deployments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they come back to a very ordinary, usual world, but their whole status as a human being is changed by virtue of what they have seen during the war. So I think that movie, just giving a shout out to that movie. But I think that considering how efficient the movie is, I'm surprised that it effectively hits all those notes.
Yeah. I mean, it covers a lot of material in a short space of time. And I liked the fact that, you know, snipers are very interesting people. I mean, these are people who can hit with incredible accuracy. And it also conveyed that whole feeling of lying around for hours and hours and hours and having to make a decision about taking someone else's life, not only saving people's lives,
but
also making that split second decision to take someone's life in order to save many. So I think it did that really well.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite aspect of this movie is the tactical importance of sniping. I mean, you know, they have this horrible reputation. The word sniping has this horrible kind of, you know, somebody who sits there hidden, taking pot shots at people while they're in relative safety. And more than anything, this movie kind of got me away from that. And I understood in many regards just how important that support role is to the guys on the ground, because, you know, their role is not necessarily to be offensive, but it's to protect your guys on the ground. That's the role of a sniper as portrayed in this movie. And so often you see, you know, movies like Black Hawk Down where there's this cowardly sniper, you know, in some tower, you know, just taking pot shots and really trying to, you know, kill the offensive, you know, be almost like an offensive weapon. Here it felt so much more like he was an integral part of the defense. And like you said, Yazdi, that camaraderie, that brotherhood, they had to count on him. He was their edge. Mm-hmm. He was the difference between them surviving a mission or them dying. You know, just that was really well executed here.
Yeah. What did you guys think of Sienna Miller? So she's popping up in a lot of movies recently, and it seems like she's playing the same role with different colored hair. So she was the wife.
yeah.
And then she was also the wife in Foxcatcher recently as well. And it's a different Sienna Miller than we've seen in the past.
I haven't seen much of Sienna Miller. I think she was famously known to be
associated with Jude Law. Yeah.
Yeah, the ex-Miss Jude
And then
Law.
She played kind of little frivolous, you know.
Yeah, she was in Layer Cake.
Yeah, in a few movies. Yeah. But I think this is as good as I've seen her. I think this is a difficult role.
Yeah.
And first of all, great job with the accent. I mean, she looks she looks American. She talks, you know, fairly credible, you know, American accent. And I think in many ways she is kind of the emotional center of the movie, because Chris Kyle, and I was going to get to this in just a minute and we can discuss it more, but one of the disappointments of the movie for me was that you really don't understand the pathology behind this person. The whole movie is based on him. It's based on a real life person. And he comes across somewhat one dimensional to me. He seemed too simple a person. And I don't know if that was intentional. And I don't mean that in a negative sort of way, but there wasn't much texture to his character.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a soldier
and that was it. And you know, there were reasons why he went to, you know, he decided to enlist for the war, and, you know, he realized he had this gift, and he almost then had to bear the responsibility of this gift and then have to keep getting redeployed. But I think his wife, Sienna Miller playing his wife, kind of carried through the difficulty that she faced, you know, mm-hmm. with somebody who keeps being sent off to war to serve his country.
I felt very much the same way. I mean, I think the difficulties of the redeployments are seen through the eyes of Sienna Miller, mm-hmm. and she's the person that you feel for. You know, he's kind of going off to do his thing, but you know, if there is any emotional difficulty around that, he certainly didn't seem to be encountering it. You know, he was kind of, it felt very much to me like he was happy to go, you know, back into the lion's den. And
in fact, he wanted to. That's where he felt that his purpose was being achieved,
but,
I think.
You know, for us as the audience, kind of understanding, you know, what that means to a family, you know, was very much done with Sienna Miller's character. Yeah. I thought she did a nice job here. I mean, I don't know much about her other than, you know, her kind of tabloid reputation.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but, you know, it's the E! News kind of thing that that we hear about.
Yeah.
But here she did very competent work. And also in the in Foxcatcher, again, and not a very big role in that movie, but an important one nonetheless. And again, very good work.
Because I would think both the Bradley Cooper role as well as the Sienna Miller role in a Clint Eastwood movie would be very highly sought after, very highly competitive roles. So I think, you know, it's kind of interesting that you would pair those two individuals up. You wouldn't think to normally. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, she probably got picked through a process of, you know, competing with several other, you know, probably much more well-known actors. And, you know, she finally was picked for it. So it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see personally a Matt Damon do the Bradley Cooper role. And not that I have anything against Bradley Cooper. He's a very hardworking actor. And, you know, he's clearly very serious. And he's interested not just in the Hangover and so forth. And he's shown his commitment to kind of serious cinema. So I won't fault him. But I almost wish... I wonder what some other actor might have done with it.
Yeah, and I like his physical transformation as well. I mean, clearly he's put on a ton of weight and really beefed up.
Almost too beefy.
Yeah, I almost didn't recognize it was Bradley Cooper initially. It was kind of a strange, oh my God, that's Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
But he did play it very straight. And again, you know, you have to wonder, is this based on a biography or is this... So Yazdi's acknowledging me there. I mean... With it being based on a biography, is it one of those, again, very reverential, unbroken type biographies where, you know, the guy is portrayed as an American hero above all else? And the movie really wants to get that message across. I mean, if you look at the marketing, the poster with the American flag and, you know, the timing of its release, I guess, maybe not so much the timing of its release, but it's definitely going for that... you know, all American, you know, war hero feel.
Yeah, and it's been picked for best adapted screenplay as well. So
by the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
No, not by the Coen brothers.
By Jason Hall.
Yes, by Jason Hall.
Yes.
From
the book by Chris Kyle, Scott McHugh, and James DeFelice.
Okay. Anything else on this one, or should we wrap it up? No. Let's wrap it up. So, Joe, you go first.
A very competent movie. In some ways, if you take The Hurt Locker and you take last year's Lone Survivor and you kind of mash them up, you end up with something like this. Mm. And, you know, this movie was perhaps not as visceral and, you know, almost frightening as Lone Survivor was. But it's not as emotionally powerful and resonant and poignant as The Hurt Locker was. So it falls for me somewhere in between those two movies. But nonetheless, you know, a very competent, solid movie. You know, you've probably already been to see it anyway, given how well it's done at the box office. But I would recommend this to just about anyone with any interest in this war movie genre. So certainly better than last year's Fury, the other, I think probably the most recent war movie we watched. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
Yes, D.
Yeah, an 8 out of 10 for me as well. I would have really liked for this movie to be 9 out of 10, but be as it may, I think the movie was a lot better than I expected it would be. I would have personally liked to see understand a little bit more about what drove this person. I would have liked to be, I think the movie also lost an opportunity to, and I'm not giving anything away, lost an opportunity to explain what happened when it happened at the very end. You're just given a placard with some information, and it just, I think it has the intended effect, but it kind of leaves you scratching your head a little bit. But regardless, a fine, fine effort. I think it's an accomplishment, 8 out of 10.
Yeah, great point about the end. Yes, I didn't even think about that. Well acted, well directed, and a good film to watch. This has already got Oscar love, like we've mentioned throughout this podcast. And I think by nature of what it's about, it will get universal audience love. It just didn't shoot an arrow through my heart, mm-hmm. and I just didn't connect with it emotionally. Mm-hmm. But I think overall it's a good movie, so I'm going to give it 7 out of 10.
Okay.
I'm amazed that where it is in the awards list.
Me too.
It's not a bad movie by any sense, but I feel like there were many better movies mm-hmm. last year that would have made this list had this not been timed for around the time that people have got their Oscar ballots in their hand.
Well, and I think the material too, right? I mean, people want to give respect to a war hero as well. If this had been a
January
well.
Or February release, I don't know that we would have remembered it in Correct. December when filling out the ballot. And I think, yeah, there's always the strategy component to the Oscars, which is irritating. But, this movie just has picked up so many nominations that I don't want to take anything away from any of the work that was done here because it was very competent. But nonetheless, it's surprising to me that it's received the award as being a good movie.
I share your concern. I think this is very deliberate. The studios always do this. And as much as I admire Clint Eastwood, when most people don't, I think this has been an issue with all with the way the studios have released all of his movies. They always release those Clint Eastwood movies, be it Million Dollar Baby or Letters from Iwo Jima or Mystic River. They're all released around December, right around the time that the nominations come out. And then they suddenly get this, everybody, oh, it's a Clint Eastwood movie. Everybody goes out and watches it. And they kind of, elbow the other movies out, which have been sincere, well-made. They just have the poor fortune of being around in people's consciousness for months and months. It kind of, those movies kind of get left behind.
I'm sad. And again, I know we're going to do an Oscars reaction show, but I'm really sad that Bradley Cooper got the nom over someone like Jake Gyllenhaal, or even, Tom Hardy in The Drop, or Guy Pearce in The Rover, Philip Seymour Hoffman in A Most Wanted Man. I mean, there are so many.
Or Timothy Spall and Mr. Turner.
Yes, or even David Ayoello in Selma. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't want to take away from the fact that this was an American hero, but I agree with you, Joe, it doesn't merit this type of Oscar love.
Yeah. We'll talk about that on the Oscar show.
Stay tuned.
Okay. Mail at movierollers.com for comments. Let us know what you think about either of these movies or even the Oscars. We're going to do an Oscar reaction show at some point. So love to hear your thoughts about what the Academy has done with their nominations this year. Twitter.com/movierollers, Facebook.com/movierollers as well. And don't forget, do wrangle with us, rangl.com. If you have a question that you'd like us to debate with you with, shoot us a note, put up a wrangle, and we'd love to interact with you then. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.